Daniel Hannan, Conservative MEP, leading light in the Leave campaign. Good morning to you, Daniel.
Good morning, Stephen.
It's good to see that you survived the Wednesday night TV show, by the way.
Yeah, I mean, all that talk of breakfast, I was very lucky the next morning. My main reason for wanting to come to Northern Ireland, of course, is to have the soda bread and the black pudding every morning, which
yes.
I reckon that you're also tucking into from time to time.
I have been
to be alive, isn't it?
I've been getting a little bit of stick for that. Right, let's get into things. Is immigration good or bad for the UK, Daniel?
It depends on the kind of immigration, it depends on the quantities, and it depends on how you manage it. And as long as we are in charge of who comes in roughly and in what numbers roughly, it can be a very good thing. When we're not in control, when we can't deport people or stop people coming in regardless of their disqualifications, then it's not such a good thing.
And the Leave campaign has been making a huge play of immigration in this referendum. I'm still at a loss to know what you actually want, how many people you think is right to come in to the UK each
year. Well, the point is that it would be up to Parliament and therefore up to us through Parliament to decide that. It would be silly to give a particular figure and say 171,023 people should come in. The point is that it should be up to us to decide, first of all, the quantity and then the kinds of people. That if we have shortages in particular sectors, we say we want to admit this number of nurses or engineers, we want to allow this number of family reunifications, we want to have this number of refugees, we want to have this number of students. At the moment, everyone with an EU passport can come to the UK, and not just come to the UK, but claim benefits yeah. and university tuition and all the rest of it as if they were British nationals.
But
that's what's skewing the system.
But here's the problem with what you've just said. You are running a campaign, and the Leave campaign itself has been very vociferous in saying that there are too many people coming into the UK. So I'm not looking, obviously it would be farcical to look for this down to the exact number or even the exact thousand. But what is a rough level of decent immigration each year into this country? If you're telling us there are too many people coming in, then you must know what would be reasonable.
But obviously that's going to depend on where our economy is. If we have a booming economy,
let's take it
and
now.
Lots of job shortages,
let's take now.
A higher number.
So immigration is currently running at over 300,000 at the last official count.
Mm.
That's too high, you say. So what should it be?
Well, I mean, I think at the moment, to be honest, the Prime Minister's promise at the last election of bringing it down to the tens of thousands is probably unrealistic. My constituency is at the opposite end of the country from Northern Ireland, and we have labour shortages here. So the tens of thousands is probably too low at the moment. I think we could probably bring the numbers down a bit, but somewhere in between those two. But the point is, it shouldn't be up to me or you. It should be up to the country to decide through our own democratic mechanisms and procedures.
So you're actually telling me that your constituency needs more immigration?
At the moment, there is, with one or two exceptions, there are more parts of my constituency where there are vacancy signs than where there are high levels of unemployment, yeah.
And have you told that to your comrade, Nigel Farage?
I mean, at every Leave meeting, I always make the point that if you're voting Leave thinking that there's going to be an immediate kind of crackdown on all EU migration, you're going to be disappointed. That's not going to happen, right? And people understand that. We've always been a country that has accepted people from around the world. Partly there are people who need asylum, partly because we have some net inward migration. And that's going to continue inside or outside the EU. What people want in return is a sense that ultimately we are in charge roughly of who they are. So that, for example, we can deport people who have been involved in extremism and fundamentalism. So that we can say no to people who have criminal records. So that we can say no to people who are not bringing any skills and we think are likely to be a burden rather than net contributors. And I don't think that's an unreasonable thing to ask. Outside the EU, every other country in the world takes that for granted.
So if the Prime Minister, I'll move on from this in a second, but if the Prime Minister, if his target of immigration being in the tens of thousands is unrealistic, what is realistic? Let's say that there is a vote for a Brexit on June the 23rd, 2 days' time.
Mm.
So what's a realistic figure for immigration when you have control?
Well, I mean, you know, for most of the post-war period, immigration was running at sort of 30,000, 40,000 a year. Obviously, at the moment, because we have a booming economy and because the Eurozone is in crisis, a lot of people are coming from the Eurozone to the UK because we had the wit not to join the single currency. So that figure is a bit higher. But, you know, that will change over time. And I hope eventually the Eurozone will sort its problems out.
You're not giving me an answer here.
Well, because as I said earlier, Stephen, I can't say it's going to be 158,000.
I'm not looking for 158,000. Right?
Somewhere less than 330,000, somewhere more than the tens of thousands.
Well, you're giving yourself a lot of wriggle room, aren't you?
Well, like I say.
So, in other words, anybody that votes for Brexit, if they're following your logic, they might not actually get a significant reduction in immigration at all.
Right. Look, it's very important. I mean, what we've argued for throughout is control, not more or less, but control. But what a referendum
is—that's not what your campaign has argued for.
Well, it's very much what I'm arguing for, and it's what I've argued for throughout.
So there might be more immigration under a Brexit.
Well, a referendum is not electing the Leave campaign. A referendum is instructing the government to leave. A referendum is giving a mandate to get us out on favourable terms, being fair to our allies in Europe, within a reasonable timescale that works for both sides. So the same government will still be in office, but they will then be empowered to tackle immigration. They'll be able to pass laws, whereas at the moment, the European Court would strike down any attempt to restrict migration from the EU, or even to restrict benefits or other entitlements from the EU. That's the thing that would change.
And the 300,000 a year that we've often heard about during this campaign, that's the net migration into the UK figure. It's just over 300,000, isn't it, per year at the last official count. Let's remind people that half of the overall total is from non-EU countries.
I mean, that figure,
it's nothing to do with the EU.
That figure is tumbling, though. I mean, every year the non-EU numbers have been reduced, and all of that reduction has been more than wiped out by an increase from the EU, which is now half, more than half the total, even though it's, what, a tenth of the world's population. And there's no way that we can do anything about that as long as we're members. And actually, there are injustices here. I have constituents from Commonwealth backgrounds who now, you know, can't bring family members over for a wedding. I mean, not to settle here, just to visit, because there's been such an extreme crackdown on visas for non-EU nationals so as to free up unlimited space for people who may have no connection to this country at all. And I think that's no way to treat people who are the families of the guys who volunteered for us in the two wars.
But if anybody votes leave, it could be for more immigration from outside the EU, because you won't rule it out. And
well,
indeed, you're saying it could go up.
I hope people will vote leave to bring our democracy back and to have the right to hire and fire our own lawmakers, who will then take our decisions, not just on immigration, but on the economy, on criminal justice, on foreign policy and all the rest of it. I'm asking people to have confidence in the British electorate rather than in the European Commission. That's what it comes down to. Do you trust Britain or Brussels?
What about this poster last week, Nigel Farage's poster, showing brown-skinned migrants queuing at a border post with the headline Breaking Point?
I mean, I was uncomfortable with that poster, and I was also uncomfortable with some of the criticism of it that attempted to shut down any discussion of immigration by suggesting that even to raise the subject is kind of extremist.
Well, Michael Gove said he shuddered at it. And he's a Leave campaigner, obviously.
Yeah, well, I mean, I was in the Vote Leave office when that was unveiled, and people were sort of hanging, you know, putting their heads in their hands in despair. It's not part of the official Vote Leave campaign. UKIP is running its own operation. As a matter of observable fact, you know, half the country, more or less, in opinion polls, is currently planning to vote leave. That's telling me that there are an awful lot of non-UKIP voters who may very well be anti-UKIP voters.
So are you telling me you were
voting to leave?
Are you telling me you were comfortable or uncomfortable with that poster?
I was. It's not a poster that should have been put out. I think we should keep the campaign in a positive, optimistic light. But, you know, UKIP is going to do its own thing, obviously.
It's whipping up fears about foreigners, isn't it? Part of what your campaign's done.
I've told you already, it's not a poster that Vote Leave would have put out. We can't prevent UKIP doing whatever they want. But we are making a campaign that is basically upbeat. Our argument is that the UK is the fifth largest economy in the world. We're tied to every other continent. We can do much better not being attached to the only trade bloc in the world that isn't growing. We've got global horizons, and instead of being focused on the Eurozone, we should be looking abroad. I think that's an internationalist, positive, optimistic message. And that's obviously why half the country at the moment, I hope more than half the country the day after tomorrow, will vote leave when the time comes. It's not enough just to tell people what they don't like about the EU. You've got to offer people a better vision of a positive future outside.
When David Cameron made the pledge in 2010 to reduce net migration to the tens of thousands, did you think it was unrealistic at the time?
I mean, it could have been done had he been prepared to leave the EU, had he been really committed to it. And
well, he wasn't.
Well, evidently not, and that's why I think it was that's really my problem. As I say, you'll have picked up that I've not got a problem with controlled legal net inward migration. I do have a problem with making a manifesto promise to the electorate and then prioritising your EU credentials and your willingness to do the EU's bidding over the promise that you made to the voters. That, to me, is the really obnoxious thing about it.
You can let us know what you think this morning. 030 30 80 55 55. What difference does living in the EU, actually make to our lives? Name me something concrete you or I cannot do because of Brussels.
Sure. I mean, there's almost no aspect of our lives that isn't on some level touched by EU regulation. You know, the hassle of opening a bank account these days with all of your old utilities bills, that's an EU directive. Fortnightly rather than weekly recycling collection,
that's an EU directive. Well, hold on a second. When you're opening a bank account and you've got to provide identification, utility bills, etc., that's to stop money. That's anti-money laundering legislation.
It's a ridiculously cumbersome process that was introduced in a very bureaucratic way.
It's to stop criminals trying to filter dirty money through the system.
And it's not a particularly effective way of doing it, as we know. But you ask the question, what would change? I'm trying to give practical examples. You know, I'm required by law to drive my kids around in car seats until they reach the age of 12 or a minimum height. You know, I've been looking forward to discarding the wretched yogurt-encrusted blobs at a much earlier stage than that. I speak obviously of the car seats, not of the children. I mean, whether or not that's a good law, how on earth did we get to the point where such things have to be handed down to half a billion Europeans by a commission that nobody has voted for? Aren't these questions that we can decide for ourselves through local or national parliamentary mechanisms? That's the problem with the EU. If the EU were just about international cooperation, if it were just about neighbouring countries getting together, stopping wars, talking to each other, no one would have a problem with it. You and I wouldn't be having this conversation, and the country wouldn't be having a referendum. The problem is that it never stops at national borders. It presumes to regulate everything.
So when I ask you about the bigger arguments for things that we cannot do about Brussels, you talk to me about having to bring a gas bill in to open up a bank account and kids having to be put into a car seat. It's hardly an evil regime, Daniel, is it?
I'm illustrating that things which have, you'd have thought, no obvious international dimension, things that could perfectly well be left to each country, have still fallen within the remit of the Commission. But if you want to look at bigger things, you know, this country used to be the world leader in clinical trials. We have 1% of the world's population. In 2004, we were conducting 12% of clinical trials. We were at the forefront of medical research. Then the EU's Clinical Trials Directive came into effect. Now we're down to 1% again. You know, the EU's rules on data retention are wiping out what should be a massive software and programming industry in parts of the UK. It's something that we're very good at. The REACH Directive, which prevents manufacturers here importing chemicals and forces them basically to take the finished products from countries with less high environmental standards. That's causing huge unnecessary costs. And without all I'm asking for is that we take back regulatory control ourselves so that ultimately the people in charge of designing the framework for our economy are the people that we can get rid of so that they behave in our interest.
But you talk as if we're in this bubble. So how would we have regulatory control ourselves if indeed the other countries who we were trading with, some of them were in Europe, therefore we would need to have some of those regulations
when selling to Europe? Sure.
Correct.
Sure. If we leave the EU, of course our exporters will have to meet EU standards when selling to the EU, just like we have to meet Japanese standards when selling to Japan. The difference is we won't have to apply those standards to the vast majority of our economy, which is not dependent on trade with the EU. The vast majority of our economy is internal. Most of our GDP doesn't involve trade at all, right? If your listeners, you know, pop out and get a haircut or buy a cup of tea, they're adding to our economic activity. They're not adding to our trade, right? And that's about 70% of all economic activity is within the UK, and yet we have to apply 100% of EU regulation to 100% of our businesses, even though only 5% of firms in this country do any business with the EU at all.
You're asking people to take a leap in the dark in terms of the economy. There are no guarantees on economic outcomes because you can't make them. You don't know.
I think the real leap in the dark would be voting to stay in. You can't tell me, and no one can tell me, what will our budget contributions be in 10 years or 20 years? How many more migrants will have come in? How many more bailouts will we have been dragged into? I think leaving the EU is a leap back into the light.
Well,
it's taking back the basic power of self-government that every other country in the world, you know, Japan or New Zealand or Canada, takes for granted. The ability to trade with friends and allies on every continent while making its own decisions.
I'll tell you what I can do. I can quote the IMF, the International Monetary Fund. I can quote the Treasury. I can quote the IFS, Institute for Fiscal Studies. I can quote leading economists who are warning of an economic price for Brexit.
International bureaucrats love international bureaucracies. You know, if you're in that world, the Davos summit, the Brussels seminars, the tax-free, Michelin-starred gourmandizing lifestyle, you start thinking in a particular way. I've been an MEP for 17 years, and I've been part of that world, although I'm hoping not for much longer. But I would much rather look at what's happening now and ask people to trust the evidence of their own eyes. The countries in Europe which are doing best economically are Norway and Switzerland. They both have relations with the EU that are based on free trade, not political amalgamation.
Sorry, Norway, if you want to take it as an example, is having to pay a price to trade and also has had to agree to free movement of people in order to trade.
Well, 79%
That's exactly what Norway's done.
EU membership, right? And so with all its imperfections, they reckon they've got a better deal than we have, and they're right.
Does Norway have control of immigration?
Well, the difference between what Norway does and what we have to do as an EU member, yes, Norway has free movement of labour in the sense that you are allowed to take up a job offer. And that's something that we've had in this country.
It had to give it away in order to trade with Europe, didn't it?
But what they don't have is what we have, which is citizenship of the European Union, which means that you have a legal entitlement to settle in another country, to vote in another country, and freedom from discrimination on grounds of nationality.
I'm not too sure that people actually care about what the fine print of the legal document would be. You quote Norway as an example. Your campaign is suggesting that immigration is one of the big components of decision-making around this referendum vote. And when you use Norway as an example, you have forgotten to tell us, I had to tell you, that Norway had to give away free movement of people in order to trade with
the EU.
Free
movement of labour, which is not the same as free movement.
Well, that's the big thing, isn't it? Free movement of labour.
Free movement of labour means that if you have a contract and you show it to the local authority, they give you permission to stay there. You have to have a job. That is different from in the UK, where we couldn't even deport Abu Hamza's daughter-in-law, even though she's not a British national, because her son, who was born in the UK, has rights as an EU citizen, and therefore we can't deport a convicted criminal to her country of origin. That's a huge difference.
But you're mixing this up again, aren't you? Because part of what the Leave campaign have been shouting about is people from outside the United Kingdom coming in here and, quote, taking our jobs. In Norway, people can come from anywhere in Europe and take their jobs because they had to give it away to trade with Europe, Daniel.
I don't know why you put those quotes around taking our jobs. That's not a phrase that I or anyone on the Leave campaign has used. But if you want to make the point, look, Norway is not just the wealthiest country in Europe, it's the wealthiest country in the world, and is also the happiest country in the world. The UN does what it calls the Quality of Life Index. They look at longevity and literacy and infant mortality and so on. Norway is the best country in the world to be born. Now, Norway has 5 million people, and they sell more per head to the EU from outside than we do from inside, and I can't help noticing that they're managing. 79% of Norwegians prefer their current deal to full EU membership. 82% of Swiss prefer their deal to UK membership. There are 8 million Swiss, 5 million Norwegians, 64 million people in this country. We're a trading country, a global country, a maritime country. I think we might just about get by running our own affairs in our own interest.
Let's say that the economic warnings have some truth in them. So let's say the pound tumbles, stock markets slump, that there is a big period of uncertainty. Is that a price worth paying?
Well, I don't think that is going to happen. I mean, I think what happens at every election and every referendum, markets like certainty, So I suspect that over the next 48 hours, there will be a decline in the stock exchange and in the currency. And I'm certain that whatever the result, there will be a recovery on Friday. You can set your watch by these things. It happens every time because markets don't like elections of any kind. And the fundamentals here are that every continent on this planet has experienced substantial economic growth over the last decade, except Europe. Britain is in the wrong place here. Our opportunity and the reason we should leave is because we are linked by language, by law, by kinship and custom to every other continent, every other archipelago. We can do better as a global country rather than linking ourselves to the one trade bloc in the world that isn't growing.
Specifically in Northern Ireland, what guarantees can the Leave campaign give farmers that the current subsidies that they are definitely getting from Europe will be given if we're outside of Europe?
Well, the subsidies that they're getting now last until 2020, and that's the only guarantee that we can get either way.
So what guarantees can the Leave campaign give up to 2020 about subsidies for farmers?
So again, look at what's happening rather than listening to promises. We, the UK, pay into the CAP £4.6 billion every year. We get back £2.9 billion. That tells me that there is a lot of slack there to give farmers a better deal than now while still making a big saving.
So the answer is no guarantee, right?
I'm not in terms of farmers to Northern Ireland. I'm sorry to labour this point. Of course, I could tell you, yeah, we're going to do X, Y, and Z, and you would then turn around and say, you're not going to be in office, right? A referendum is a mandate to the existing government. The existing Farms Minister, George Eustace, has made very clear that the existing level of farm support will carry on inside or outside the EU.
To Northern Ireland?
To the country as a whole.
That's different, isn't it? To the country as a whole, but would farmers in Northern Ireland get the support they're currently getting?
Yes. Something like two-thirds of UFU members are voting to leave, and they've spoken to the Farms Minister about this, and they've been persuaded, because they've seen his figures, that we'd be in a position to give them probably a better deal than now.
I hesitate to talk about the £350 million a week going to the EU because we dealt with that on the TV show. But you would now admit that it's not true, right? That we don't send £350 million a week.
Look, it's the gross figure, right? Everyone understands the difference between gross salary and net salary. You know, if I say to somebody, what's basic rate income tax? The answer is 20p in the pound. It's not, it's zero because you get it all back in roads and schools and hospitals. So you quote the gross figure, which is what we take from the Office of National Statistics. They say this is the total amount. Then there is a rebate. Then there is money spent in the UK, although not spent on things that we'd have chosen for ourselves. I mean, very often spent on buying the loyalty of the groups who are now campaigning to stay in.
Yeah, even if we take this campaign slogan that was on this battle bus on the posters, your campaign said we send £350 million a week to the EU. You forgot to say gross. Actually, it's about half of that goes net. But you said in the second half of that sentence, let's fund the NHS instead. Well, that's not true either, is it? Because there's absolutely no direct correlation between the money that goes to the EU net and that would then be definitely directed back to the NHS. It's just not true.
So for the third, and I hope last time in this interview, if you vote Leave, you're not voting to elect the Leave campaign. You're instructing the government to leave. You are then freeing up money that can be spent on the NHS or can be spent in tax cuts or could be spent
exactly.
on scientific
research. Exactly. So why did your campaign say, let's fund the NHS instead?
Well, that is obviously what a lot of people would want it to do, right? And there's plainly a huge demand for that in every opinion poll that would be a priority that voters have.
Yeah.
But, of course, it'll be up to the government of the day to decide how to spend this independence dividend on whatever they regard as the priority of the time.
And we talk about ordinary people here, don't we? Because that's who would be reading that message. Any ordinary, decent person reading that message on the bus, we send £350 million a week to the EU, let's fund the NHS instead. Anybody reading that would think, well, hold on a minute, I would much rather send £350 million per week to the NHS. It's not £350 million to the NHS. It's not definitely going to the NHS, and it never was £350. This is about misleading the public.
It's every figure there is accurate. You know, £350 million is not a figure we plucked from the air. It comes from the Office of National Statistics. That's our gross contribution. It's normal in politics to quote the gross contribution. If you ask somebody what their council tax is, they don't start deducting the notional value of the street cleaning and the street lighting. In terms of what you can then do with it, I think voters are mature and intelligent, and they understand that there will be options of what, how you spend this dividend, of how you get rid of this extra bonus. Some of that money will probably go to the NHS, but there will also be other worthy causes and other worthy recipients. The point is that we would have control of it. We'd be able to spend our money on our priorities.
Well, why on earth would good people send money to the NHS when you thought the NHS was a mistake, that it actually makes people sicker? Here's what you said to Fox News in 2009.
We've lived through this mistake for 60 years now. It began with the best of intentions. It began because people thought it was wrong for those who weren't well off and couldn't afford the best healthcare to be treated differently. And everyone felt, well, this is, it's kind of a nice togetherness, kind of solidarity thing if we all take part in this experiment. But the reality is it hasn't worked. It has made people iller.
So the man telling us that he supports the campaign to send more money to the NHS actually believes that the NHS makes us iller. I'm sure that's a good message to doctors and nurses up and down the country.
Well, the 60-year-old mistake was nationalising everything. And rather than doing what every other industrialised country in the world did, which was to have a mix of private and public and an insurance-based component, and yes, our health outcomes could be a lot better if we copied some of the European models. But the point isn't about that. It's about getting money back that we can then spend ourselves. To repeat,
on a mistake?
I'm not Prime Minister. I don't know if it would go on the NHS. I don't know if it would go on tax cuts.
I'll
tell you this. It would have been enough to have wiped out the entire austerity programme, even if you take the net figure. Even if you
don't like the net figure,
that would have wiped out all the spending cuts in the last Parliament. That's a pretty serious sum of money.
Do you still think the NHS is a mistake?
No, I think there are brilliant people in it, and we could probably do better if it was a slightly more pluralist system where instead of everything being run in the same way, there were different options.
OK. Daniel, thank you very much indeed, sir. Thank you. Thank you for talking to us this morning. So that's Daniel Hannan from the Leave campaign.